I would now like to reintroduce to you the main speaker for the evening, Connie from Alpine.
Thank you. Oh, there's a clock right here. I borrowed my Bouncy's watch. Don't even need it. Well, I'm Connie Sneed, and I am an alcoholic. Oh, what a sight from up here. My peeps. How many people can stand in front of a room of 100 and some people too? I don't even know how many you are. And say, these are all my peeps. It's like the Verizon commercial, you know? It's a really wonderful feeling. You know, I don't know you all, but I know you all. And if I needed assistance or help in any way, I bet everybody in this room would be there to help me if I asked. And I you. And that's really an amazing thing. Such a deal we have here in Alcoholics Anonymous. It absolutely still just touches me to my core. I want to welcome the newcomers, the three of you who introduced yourselves and anyone else who chose not to. You are the most important people in this room. I hope I can share something tonight that you can take with you. And if you can't, leave it behind. This program is based upon opinion only, and I do have mine. And I will be sharing some of those with you this evening. And if I can time this right, I do want to take a little time to talk about that step that we don't talk about. And that is the 13th step. I think most of you have heard of it. I used to say the 13th step is taking advantage of a newcomer sexually. Then one of my sons said, I think it's taking advantage of a newcomer sexually, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And that sounded way better than the way I was looking at it. Because if you take advantage of them sexually, you certainly are taking advantage of them in every other way. And I feel very strongly about that, and I know quite a bit about it because it was done to me, and I did it. So that's enough of that for now, because I am here this evening to share with you my experience, my strength, and my hope. There's a couple things about me that are unique and different. One is that I have no horror stories from my childhood to share with you. I was very blessed to have had a picket fence childhood. I'm an adult child of loving and caring parents, and I apologize for that. I know that's not real common in these rooms, but you see, I'd like to see a show of hands for, it's not as rare as we think. How many of you are adult children of loving and caring parents? Look around. And we still ended up drunks. Yeah. I was born in Billings, Montana. Any Montanans here? One. See? It's the way we like it. One in every crowd. And I started drinking in high school. I was raised rigidly not to do that. My father enjoyed his beer, but It was when you were 21 and you know, all the roles. Is very popular in my generation. I graduated from high school in 1965. It was still pretty important to be a virgin when you got married. And not to drink until you're 21. I didn't make either one of them. We used to go out in the boonies on the weekends and have keggers, build a big bonfire, park around the fire, have a big keg of beer. I didn't like beer from the moment I drank it. But I did love what it did to me. I loved the effect. And we drank beer because that's what we could afford. And the other thing that is unique and different about me is that I come from another planet. That planet is called Perfectus. You might have heard of it. On Perfectus, everything is wonderful. There are no resentments or fears or jealousies, any of that. And then our flying saucer came down to Earth one day to explore. And the flying saucer left and forgot me. So I just kind of meandered through life wondering what the heck is going on. Because I saw a lot of resentment, I started feeling a lot of resentment. And I felt very, as you can well imagine, I felt very lonely. I felt very different from all the rest, because I was. I didn't feel a part of, because I wasn't. And so I just acted as if. I always acted as if everything was okay. And that really takes a lot of energy to act like I had wonderful self-esteem when inside I was dying. I was just dying from as far back as I remember. I believe that I came right out of the womb, flaming alcoholic. The ism, alcohol is just a symptom, the ism of the disease I had from the get-go. And I picked up my first drink at the age of 15. And then it just goes on from there. But when I poured beer, it was as if I had a hole in the top of my head. When I poured beer into it, self-esteem just oozed all over my body. And I could be anything. I could be anybody. I had that just right state of being that I'm sure is what they felt on Perfectus. Maybe that was the fuel they used on Perfectus, and that's why everybody was so happy. So I would pour more and more through the top of my head because I like that feeling. I love that feeling. I loved you. You loved me. We were a happy family. I knew you wanted to listen to my profoundness for hours on end. And I didn't particularly want to listen to yours, but which tells me something now, how very self-centered I was then. Wasn't too interested in hearing yours. Wasn't too interested in being your best friend. I would, but only if you did everything for me first. If there was something in it for me, you know, I was constantly tuned into WIFM. What's in it for me? What's in it for me? And I'll talk more about that later, I hope. I just love when speakers say, and I'll come back to that later. And then they do. I have to just hope like hell that I do. I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever get back there or not. I married my high school sweetheart. Went together all through high school. They used to call us Sonny and Cassius. Yeah, and all the old people just laughed because they're old enough to remember who Sonny and Cassius are. We'd break up, get back together, break up, get back together all through high school. I would milk a relationship until there was nothing left to milk, and then I would milk it some more. I was so needy, it was pathetic. But I acted as if I was on top of the world. because I couldn't let you know how much pain I was in on the inside. I couldn't let you know because I couldn't even let me know. I constantly felt less than. Constantly. I married my high school sweetheart. He joined the Navy, so I went with, and that's how I ended up in San Diego. We wanted to have a picket fence marriage. We wanted to have children and go to PTA and do all the things that good parents do. And we were both sick and didn't know it, had no idea. We had three sons together every 4 years, whether we needed it or not. And finally figured out what caused it, and I never used his toothbrush again. And we would, being in the Navy, party with other couples on the weekends. I really, truly thought that's what Navy couples do. That's what you do. We'd party on the weekends. When I was married 3 months, for 3 months, it was the first time he hit me. I knew he had a temper. In high school, I kind of found that sexy. But he had never hit me. And he hit me for the first time. And that was a real wake-up call, but I didn't wake up. I just kept right on going. I just had another drink. And what would happen when he'd hit me after that is I would drink. And when I drank, I had a big mouth. I had a lot of false courage. I could say anything to him that I wanted so badly to say to him when I was sober, but I didn't have the guts. So when I would say those things, he would hit me again. And after a while, it's just like a vicious cycle, going round and round and round. And we were like two sick parasites just feeding off each other. And that just continued to get worse and worse and worse. He would go overseas for 6 months, and I would take our three boys down to the ship to say goodbye to Daddy. And I'd have my Kleenex, and I would dab at my eyes as the ship pulled out. Until I couldn't see the ship anymore. And then I would turn around and go, yes! Because then I could do what I wanted to do. He couldn't control me anymore. I could be the real me. And the real me was to drink. Because I liked the way I felt when I drank. I liked getting up to that level of smooth. You know, you have one drink and it's okay. Two drinks. It's what the normies call taking the edge off, just relaxing after work, you know, one or two drinks. Whatever the hell that means. Three or four drinks. With me, it was about the fourth drink where I'd start feeling that little tiny glow, that little bitty smooth. And if I could just have stayed at smooth, folks, I'd still be drinking today. That was the best damn feeling I'd ever felt in my life. And I would kind of catch myself, like I knew smooth was going to be worse if I didn't watch it. So then I drank rum and coke, and I would have rum and coke, and then I would start skipping and having a coke and check myself. Yeah, still smooth. Okay, I can have a rum and coke. Still pretty smooth. Then a coke. Then I'd check myself again. Smoother. Have another rum and coke. Almost smoothest. But not quite. Of course, not quite. Because I wanted the mega smoothness, the, you know, that, you know, of course you know, that's why you're here. And somewhere along the line, smooth became bumpy. Because there's that invisible line that alcoholics can't see. And we go over that line, and there's no getting back. And the next thing I'd know, I'd be who knows where, different places all the time. I used to go out drinking sometimes with Al-Anon women friends. They weren't in Al-Anon, they were normies. And then around 9:30 or 10 at night, they'd say, "Oh, well, gotta work tomorrow." And I'd go, "Who cares? Worry about that tomorrow." But they would leave, and I just couldn't see it. It made no sense to me. Leave? We're just starting to have fun. Because we're smoother. Didn't they get it? No, I would order wine like they did, and I would try taking a sip when they did. No more, no less, just when they did. And they'd always have the little pinky. And those people could talk for 15, 20 minutes in between sips. And I'm sitting there twiddling my fingers, you know, like, what the hell? Come on. What is so interesting to talk about? So I would just give up, you know, and just drink it the way I wanted to drink. And they'd go home, 9:30, 10 o'clock. And they'd say, "Connie, aren't you going to go home? We've got to work tomorrow." And I said, "Oh, no, I'm going to meet a friend. They'll give me a ride home." I had no idea how I was getting home. Except that I did know how I was getting home. The Admiral, which I non-affectionately called my husband, was overseas. My children were 10, 6, and 2. My 10-year-old son, he was very mature for his age. I was raising him to be very independent. Certainly, he could watch the children for a few hours. He knew how I taught him how to change a diaper, fix a bottle, fix a simple meal. You remember the typical meals, all you moms, macaroni and cheese and hot dogs, frozen pizza. What else? SpaghettiOs. Yummy stuff. Pot pies. That was a good one. Used to get them 4 for a dollar. And that's what I taught him to make so that I could stay at the bar a little longer. I would go up to the bar itself, and sit at the end stool. And I wore the skirts with the slits up the sides back then, and I was much thinner and had really great legs. And I would always cross my legs so that the slit kind of fell apart in just an oh-so-sexy way. And it would take a couple minutes, and one of you guys would come over and say the most profound things, like, "Penny for your thoughts." Or something even more profound, like, "What's a nice girl like you doing in a place like this?" Well, puke. Guys, if you have to go back out again, please find some new lines. Now, I've been sober a long time, but I bet you they're using the same ones. They might just rephrase it a little bit so it sounds cooler for today's standards, but you get my drift. And then we have to sit there like, "Ooh, you're so deep." And we play the game too. I'm not picking on you guys. We play the game too, don't we? And we're good at it. And that's how we don't have to buy drinks. So, you know, I was very selective about who I drank with, and I would check them out pretty thoroughly, about 30 seconds. So they always qualified. Asked them to sit down. And we were off and running. And he would buy the drinks. And we would talk about, oh, things like, he'd say, "Boy, Connie, you're so different than all the rest." "I And I'd say, thank you. And then he'd say the one that just absolutely cinched everything. You understand me so much better than my wife does. And I'd say, so do you. Isn't that amazing? And then we would eventually leave the bar for parts unknown. And I had this wonderful habit of leaving the bar with Brad Pitt. And always waking up with Pee Wee Herman. I can tell you relate, and I love it when you relate to me. So anyway, my drunk log just goes on and on and gets worse and worse and worse. That's just some of the profound parts. I started passing out in motels because those guys would end up taking me to places. I had no idea where I was. They shouldn't have done that. I have 3 children, for God's sakes. You know, I should have been at home. I couldn't even remember where my car was. But I always got home okay. I got home safely. But I kept doing this blackout thing, you know, passing out all the time, not going home. The oldest son is now 12. So the others are 8 and 4. But one time, I decided I got to stop doing this. Not drink. Not stop that. Let's not get too serious there. I got to start staying out all night and leaving my oldest son in charge. So I decided that I would bring him home. I would just bring the guys home. You see, I had to get to know them better. I had to hear what they had to say, all that stuff I just told you, because I was being beat by their father, my children's father. I absolutely hated him, and I hated me. And I had no clue how to get out. Not a clue. So I thought, if I bring them home, then I'm safe. My children are sound sleepers. But I just couldn't leave them in the bar and come home by myself, because then I'm stuck with me. So that's what I did. And one night, my middle son was 6. They were all very sound sleepers, but he woke up. He came into my room, turned on the light, because he'd had a very bad dream. And I jumped up and got him back into his bed. And he said, Mommy, I had a bad dream. And I said, I know, honey, it's okay. But, Mommy, what's that man doing in Daddy's bed? And I said, well, honey, what man? What do you mean? Well, Mommy, I saw him. I said, no, honey, you're just having a bad dream. He goes, no, that's not what my dream was about. I said, honey, it was a bad dream. I'd go back to sleep. And then I'd go back in my room and tell the significant it to get out of my house. Now look what he's done. Just look at what he's done. And he'd say, I didn't have my car. And I'd say, I don't care. You're out of here. And I would just kick him out. So this went on for years. I had to change it a little bit when Daddy came home from overseas, but we got transferred to Virginia, and I drank for 6 more months, and there's just a whole bunch of other horrible stories I could tell you, and they just get worse and worse and worse. I had become an alcoholic slut. I was a really good mom by day. I never was in PTA. I found that rather boring. But I did go to Cub Scouts. I baked brownies. I was Little League team mother, soccer, you name it. I loved my children as much as any other mother did. In fact, I think more. But alcohol had become more important. The addiction had become more important. And I hated myself for it, but I just couldn't stop. I finally hit bottom when the Admiral was home. And I got home at 4:30 in the morning, and I'd simply... I missed a telephone pole because I reached to my car to get a cigarette. and looked up, and that telephone pole just moved right in the middle of my windshield. And I swerved, and I missed it, but it took off all the siding of the family station wagon. And I got home, and the admiral said, Connie, you're an alcoholic, and you do not deserve to be the mother of my children. If you don't do something about your drinking today, the boys and I will not be here tonight. You said 5 to 9, right? Okay, I gotta get sober. So easy to talk about your drunk log, you know, we know it so well. So I didn't know what to do, but there was this guy at work who had just, we were in sales, and he would keep coming up to me saying weird stuff like, you got a little headache today, Connie? And I'd say, headache? What are you talking about? And he'd say, I think you know what I'm talking about. And he'd walk away. Then a week or two later, he'd come up and say, you really like the sauce, don't you, kid? Do-do-do-do-do-do. I said, what is sauce and what the hell are you talking about? And he's like, I think you know what sauce is. And he'd walk away. Well, this day, when my husband had told me he was going to take my children, that wasn't going to happen. And I went to work that day, and I couldn't find that guy fast enough, and I didn't even know why I was looking for him. And when I found him, I asked him if he could have a cup of coffee, and he said, sure, so we did. And I said, how did you know that I had, and he goes, drinking problem? And I said, well, yeah. And he said, well, honey, after a while, we can just kind of pick him up. I said, who's we? And what are you talking about? Well, I haven't found it necessary to pick up a drink in 7 years. And I said, 7 years? Why? He said, because my life became unmanageable. He spoke that weird language called programmees. I said, well, how'd you do it? He said, well, I went to AA. I went, oh! Well, would there be anyone there like me? I thought I was a real class act when I drank. And he said, oh, honey, I think you'll recognize yourself. So I went to this address he gave me. It was a church. I thought there'd been a big mistake. And they welcomed me in. It was all these pretty, nice, pretty, clean people, kind of like you. And they started sharing with me one-on-one. They dedicated that whole meeting to me because I was a newcomer. They said that. We're dedicating the meeting to Connie. She's a newcomer. We're going to disperse with what we usually do. I don't know what they usually do. But I was, shaking like a leaf. And they start talking to me one-on-one. And for a while, I thought the admiral had gotten down there somehow ahead of me and set me up. Because everything they were talking about, I was relating to. Maybe not the experience, but the cause and effect, the feelings. And they were to maybe the 10th or 11th person. There was about 12 people there. And I was having a spiritual experience, but I didn't know what that was because I was an atheist. I had no clue what a spiritual experience was. And I finally realized that this flying saucer had come back and picked me up. It came back and got me, guys. You didn't leave me here all alone. And they said, welcome home, Connie. Welcome home. Never forget it as long as I live. And that was January 5th, 1981, and I just celebrated 28 years of sobriety. And that shouldn't happen. That shouldn't happen to someone like me. Shouldn't happen, but it did. And that son of mine, the oldest one that had to be an adult before his time, came up to me one time and said, "Mom," and I said, "What, honey?" Now I'm sober now. He said, "You robbed me of my childhood, and I resent you for it." Thank God I was sober, and I was able to look at him and say, "You're right, honey, and I'm so, so sorry." I'd already made amends to him, you see, but I didn't care if I had to make 25 amends to each of my kids, if it would help them heal from this disease and the horror that they saw either from their father or from me. And my middle son came up to me one time when I was going to speak somewhere. We were still living in Virginia. I did most of my drinking here in San Diego. We got transferred to Virginia. I drank 6 months longer and then got into recovery. And my kids went to Alitot in Virginia. They learned the slogans and all kinds of stuff. They were 13, 9, and 5 when I got sober. And the middle one said, "Mom, can I come with you tonight?" And I said, "No, honey, you're too young." And he said, "No, I know you have a disease. I know. I learned in Alitot. So it's okay if I come." And I said, "No, when you're a little older, you can." And he goes, "Okay. Mom, do you remember that lady that lived by us at Navy Housing? And the kids used to call her a slut?" I said, "Well, kind of." And he goes, "That's what you were, huh, Mama?" And I said, "Yes, honey, that's what alcohol did to Mommy. And I don't do that anymore." And he said, "And do you remember that bad dream I had, Mom?" Now, he'd had plenty of bad dreams since that day, but I knew exactly what dream he meant. And he knew I knew what dream he meant. And I knew he knew. And I said, "Yes, I remember." And he said, "I wasn't dreaming, was I, Mama?" And I thought, you know, if he's asking, he's ready to know. And I said, "No, honey, you weren't dreaming." And he said, "Okay, Mama, don't tell me anymore." These were his exact words. "Don't tell me anymore, because I feel like my heart's going to pound out of my chest." I said, "Okay," and I held it. You know, the book says if we could go back and change our past, we would. If I could go back and change one thing, it would be the damage I did to my children. I absolutely would love to take all those memories. They could get up here and give you a talk and tell you completely different stories and probably be more honest than I am. They remember. Don't think, guys, that your kids don't know. That man who had sent me to my first meeting became my sponsor. I don't recommend that real often. I really believe in the women helping the women and the men helping the men. But he was there. I was grateful to him. He had 7 years sobriety. I tried to seduce him in the family, in the company elevator. He would have nothing to do with it. It said something about 13 step. And told me it'd be better if I had a female sponsor. But with the hours we worked, it was barely possible to go to meetings. So he did. He was willing to take me through the steps. And thank you, God, that he did. And when we got to the second step, and I read the second step and the third step, I went, "Oh, brother." And I went to him and I said, "Dick, I'm an atheist. It's my American right to be that. And so I just won't be able to do 2 and 3. We'll just have to move on to 4. And he said, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I thought you said you were willing to go to any lengths to get sober." And I said, "To stay sober." And I said, "I am." He said, "Well, then, honey, you gave up that right. You better find some kind of power greater than you. Can't you think of any power greater than you?" And I went, Nope. He said, and he got kind of mad. And he said, well, then fake it till you make it. You pray to nothing every morning. And every night when you go to bed, you pray to nothing. And I did every morning, every morning. Thank you, nothing. Please help me stay sober today. And that night, I'd say, thank you, nothing, for keeping me sober today. And it worked. Because that was, nothing was a higher power of my own understanding. And it took me until I was 90 days to find something whom I choose today to call God. And it was huge. And I don't have time to go into it, but it's the same God I have now. And it was incredible. And it was as if I was carrying this trash bag around. And I'm putting all my crap into it, all my character defects, all my anger, all my jealousy, all my sloth. What's the more? All those. Throwing them in there. And this voice comes to me and says, Connie, you want me to carry your bag for a while? I said, hell no, I can carry it myself. And the voice goes away. So I keep on throwing more trash in there and more trash. And all of a sudden the voice says, Connie, the bottom of your bag is spilling. Your garbage is falling on the ground. And I'd say, thank you. And I'd reach down, get all the garbage from yesterday. And, of course, then I got to take the time to put the garbage in from today. Reaching down, getting yesterday's garbage, putting in new garbage. And now my bag's so big, I can't see in front of me. I can't see clearly. I don't know where I'm going. And the voice comes to me and says, Connie, please, just let me have the bag for a while and see how it feels. Well, it was getting pretty big and pretty uncomfortable. So I finally said, okay, you can have it for a minute. I just need a break. And I would hand the bag to the voice. That would feel so good that I didn't have to carry around all my troubles all by myself anymore. And then I'd realize that the voice is trying to trick me. And I'd say, can I have the bag back, please? And the voice would say, absolutely. You can have it back whenever you want. I said, would you keep it around for a long time if I ask you? Keep it for as long as you want. You have free will and freedom of choice. You see, I love you so much I can hardly take my eyes off you. So, hour by hour, year by year, I let him hold that bag. Step three. For as long as possible. But my ego would take over once in a while. And I'd have to say, can I have the bag back, please? Especially if it has something to do with my kids, because God knows I needed to help. I mean, I'm their mom, you know? I got to help God. That was a real big mistake, because he did a fine job of helping with my children all by himself sometimes. A couple times, really big ones. When I think I told you that I had become an alcoholic slut out there, when I came in here, I removed the alcohol. Now what am I? Sober slut. That's what I am. I'm a sober slut. And I still behaved in the same way until I did the steps and learned how to love myself. And I learned how to love myself, I believe for me, the best way I learned it was step 11. Where it says, seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to love than to be loved, to understand than to be understood. I'd had it backwards all my life. Comfort me, love me, understand me, please, because I can't stand myself. And I forced myself to practice doing it first. Doing it first, what a concept. Comfort and love and understand you, whether I felt like it or not. Take the time to listen to you. Take the time to help you.
And after I practiced this for quite a while, women start coming up to me and saying, would you be my sponsor? I say, what do you want me for? Well, because you're so loving and I'm comfortable with you. Absolutely amaze me, because I was one of the most self-centered people I've ever met. And then they kept coming. My son, who was 5, grew up in this program, really. And I made amends to him one time when he was in his teens, and I said, honey, I'm so sorry I was on the phone so much some of that time. I still was there for him and his games and his everything, but I said, I'm just so sorry I was on the phone so much that time. He said, Mom, I thought you were just born with that on your ear. I didn't know you were choosing it. I thought it was just there. Anyway, I remarried I divorced the Admiral when I was 3 years sober, and met a man in the program when I was 6, and we dated for a year and a half, and it used to be that I'm trying to think of the shortest way to tell you a long story. It would be as if I went up to a guy and said, hi, my name's Connie, and I feel really crappy inside. No, I have a very good God, and I haven't worked my steps, and I don't even know who the hell I am, but I was wondering if you'd mind spending 99.9% of your time trying to make me happy. Well, ladies, anybody who says yes to that, run the other way. You don't want them anyway. But finally, when I had worked on the steps long enough, sponsored enough people, taken them through the steps, which kept me in the steps, which kept me in the book, and I finally loved myself to some degree, I was able to go up to Guy and say, hi, my name's Connie, and I really like who I am today, and I feel I have something to give, and I would like to share that with you. And I said that one day, sort of, kind of like that. And he said, yeah, I have that too. Why don't we go have a cup of coffee? And my mama didn't raise no fool. I married him. And we've been married for 20 years. So, I'm going to end. My God, time goes fast up here. I'm going to tell you my favorite recovery story. I'm not going to be able to get into the 13 steps like I would have liked to, but I think you get the general idea. But my youngest son he graduated from high school in 1993. He came home one day and said, Mom, guess what? I said, what? He said, I got nominated for Homecoming King. And I said, oh, honey. Oh, wow, that's great. And he said, yeah, but I'm supposed to bring a escort to the halftime, the game and the dance and everything. And I don't really want to take an escort because I want to dance with all the girls. Chip off the old block. And I said, why don't I just take someone as a girl who's a friend? And then you can both dance with whoever you want. And he said, that's a good idea. So he left, came back a while later, and said, Mom. I said, what? He said, would you like to go? Yes, you moms every time. And ha-ha, it happened to me. And I said, you want to take your mom? He said, yeah. And I said, why? And he said, because, Mom, you told me to take a friend. And you're my best friend. Jeez. This happened in 1993. You'd think it was yesterday. I said, well, I'd be honored. And I went, and I came in on the convertible with my boy, doing the wave. And I had to go up on the float with him at halftime. He got homecoming king, my boy did. And so then I had to release him to the queen. And I went back up into the stands, and we had some AA friends with us up there, and I said, who would have ever thought a drunk mom like me would be queen for a day? And I brought a visual aid tonight, folks. I'd like you to introduce you to my son, Casey. Stand up. I didn't know he was going to do that. My favorite recovery story, because it just doesn't get any better than that, folks. And those kind of things don't happen to drunks like me. But by the grace of God, the free gift of God in this program, I have been blessed a ton. And that boy that had that bad dream, he has 14 years sobriety today in this program. And I'm going to close now. I'm 1 minute over, I think. I hope I can get through this. I wrote a poem when I was 3 years sober. And I want to share this with, this is dedicated to the newcomer. Please feel free to come up and get one. My daughter-in-law, sitting next to my son, of course, who had the baby in her tummy. She has copies for you if you would like one, anyone that would like one. I walked into the room. My fears were overwhelming. I didn't trust a soul in there. I wondered what they were selling. I didn't believe in any God. Chances of that were slim. They told me there was one thing I needed to know. There is a God, and I ain't him. I told them I wasn't an alcoholic, that I had nothing to fear, that I was unique and different. They said, what the hell are you doing here? I said, oh, just to let them over that sometimes I drink too much, that they were a fine organization, but I didn't need a crutch. They all began to share with me their experience, their strength, and their hope, about how their lives started falling apart, how they couldn't stay off the dope. As I listened to what they had to say, I thought to myself, how can this be? They're not talking about themselves. They're simply describing me. I was really confused and my brain was all fuzzy and I didn't know how to act. They said, that's okay, my friend, just keep coming back. They said they would give me what was freely given to them. These people I didn't even know, and they even called me friend. They said I had a right to be happy. That was a new one on me. I cried, how do I get that? Work the 12 steps and you'll see. They told me to read the big book and learn to be happy and free. I didn't want to believe them, but I knew better by then, you see. One man had lost his wife, a woman never got her degree. Another lost his house, and I had lost me. Sometimes I still get crazy, sometimes I get off the track. But I always remember that first meeting of mine when they said, keep coming back. So I do, and I always get better, but perfect I'll never be. For the joys in the journey, arriving is not important to me. You don't have to drink, you don't have to hurt, you don't have to be afraid anymore. Together with the help of God, we can win this war. I've talked about me, I've talked about sex. My mouth is one of my defects. But if you've got one little thing from all that I've said, then I can handle the rejects. I love you, dear friends. And I want you to have what's been given to me for free. I'm grateful to God and you people for giving me back to me. I love you all. Thank you.